This is an audio-only version, offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Our next speaker, Tom Callow from Chargemaster, has worked in the automotive sector for the past 9 years in a number of communications roles. Tom's knowledge of electric vehicles extends to products and technologies, as well as key stakeholders and issues, and he formerly chaired the SMMT's Electric Vehicle Group. He will now speak on how the private sector is meeting the challenge of charging infrastructure in the UK.
I just wanted to start a bit of an audience participation. Can you raise your hand if your parents or parent at your age now, the age you are now, when they were that age, if they had a smartphone? Can you raise your hand? Okay. Can you raise your hand if you currently have a smartphone and plug it in every day, every other day? Great. Okay. Thanks for that. So a quick run through of who we are. We're the largest provider of EV charging infrastructure in the UK, and we have two main business divisions. So the two core areas of our business are manufacturing. So we make every type of charging point from the slowest to the fastest in the market at the moment. They're all made in the UK in our factory in Luton. And we also have our second strand of our business, which is about operating the UK's largest public charging network. So there's two core areas of our business there, manufacturing and then network operation, much like a mobile phone operator, for example. We've supplied over 50,000 home chargers in the UK. That says home, workplace and public. We're now over the 50,000 margin, we believe, which is probably over half of all installed home chargers. We've got over 40,000 users of our public charging network. And we'll come on to some other numbers on users at the moment. So the market, we've heard a lot about the market and EVs and obviously growing over recent years, and how fast is it growing? Well, in percentage terms, yes, we've heard the sort of 1%, 2% figure banded around. But you can see from this, it's clearly a fast growing market, and particularly around the sort of the middle of the middle of the 2014-15 period there of the graph. The projection we have at the moment, we've revised it ever so slightly, is for about 60,000 units this year on the back of about 48,000 last year, and that's plug-in vehicles. So we have a very fixed view as a company, as you might imagine, about charging, that if a car can't be charged externally, then it's not an electric car. I think that's a pretty fair view. Otherwise, you know, these mild hybrids, full hybrids, basically have a sort of a very small electric breath that they impart on the petrol engine. So they are basically a petrol or diesel car with a very, very mild bit of assistance. So electric cars are cars that you can plug in. The only reason if that number won't be met this year, and in fact it could be exceeded, is supply. There is demand far exceeding supply. You've seen announcements from Volkswagen and other brands, Mercedes, who actually can't keep up with the demand for their vehicles in the UK at the moment. The only other scenario where that's true is in the very exotic high end of the market with things like limited edition Porsches. So while diesel demand is slipping, petrol demand is static, the demand for electric cars, by consumers at least, is growing rapidly and among fleets as well. So obviously that's the car market itself. Where's the infrastructure? Well, happily, the infrastructure is growing too. So this is this just shows you the number of public charging points. This is just public charging points in the UK over the past few years and the growth in that sector. Now, obviously, we're year to date so far in 2018, so we're already at 16,000. And that number will probably reach at least sort of 19,000 to 20,000 by the end of this year, we think. In terms of just a couple of points around this, because it has been mentioned, I don't have a slide on it specifically. The grid is a question that obviously everyone raises. Can the grid cope with charging? National Grid, who are the operator of the transition network in the UK, have said it will, right until 2050, until we achieve the full EV adoption that we expect to achieve in the UK. So if National Grid's confident, I'm pretty confident. In terms of the two elements of that, so power and overall energy supply, they're looking at EVs potentially taking about, by 2050, adding about 9 to 10% on overall electricity demand. That's in terms of the actual energy consumption. In terms of the peaks, that's where the challenges are likely to lie. So the individual power peaks for demand. We all know where that is at the moment. It's 6, 7 p.m. in the evening in the UK when we all get home and have dinner, watch TV, et cetera, put the kettle on. The difference with going home and having a meal or having a cup of tea during a soap or whatever is that that's when you're gonna do it regardless. You can't really be persuaded to have dinner at midnight, most of you. You can't really move the TV schedule. So that peak in power for the current demand is probably not going to shift. The great thing about EVs is that most of the EVs that charge at home aren't needed till the next morning. Typically, they're plugged in for 12 hours. Most of the EVs that are plugged in will probably be charged in 5. And that's if they're empty. So what we're actually seeing is that the average home charge is something like 10 kilowatt hours, which actually will only take about an hour and a half on a standard home charger. So of that 12-hour plugged-in period, cars are actually only charging for a very small amount of that time. So pushing that charge back into the early hours of the morning through very simple apps that people already have on their phones. You can program the car from inside the vehicle on every current electric vehicle. It's really not a problem. So pushing the demand back into the evenings for electric cars is very easy and doesn't disrupt anyone, because once you've plugged in, that's done, and the car will charge when you tell it to charge. Another quick point on the sort of petrol model that was raised earlier. At the moment, about 70% of all petrol retailer revenues in the UK are from non-fuel customers. So that's not from fuel, that's from non-fuel customers. So that's people like me who sometimes drop into a petrol station in my EV and buy a coffee. So the majority of revenues are already driven by non-fuel. So that signals to me that actually those premises have a future if they adapt to the current market demands. Now, at the moment, a lot of people do stop there because they are fueling. So that's why you're seeing a lot of interest from those businesses in charging and whether they can put charging into those facilities as well. So we hope to do more of that in the near future. And for numbers wise, just looking at public, and bearing in mind you have to go to a petrol station to fill up, we don't have a petrol tap at home. There are about 67,000 petrol pumps, and I mean individual petrol pumps, in the UK today. That number of charging points will exceed 70,000, so exceed the number of petrol pumps in the UK by probably end of 2019, beginning of 2020 in our view. So, and this is not infrastructure you actually need in many cases, because if you're charging at home, you won't necessarily need this every day. So we're going to exceed the number of petrol pumps in the UK within the next few years. So in terms of the future of the market, we've got obviously, and this is in the full spirit of probably, it could well be the Bill Gates thing about always overestimating growth the next 2 years and underestimating it the next 10 years perhaps. But we do think these numbers are pretty solid, and we've shared these with OEMs and their forecasts that are agreed with by government. So we've got around 150 plug-in cars on the road today. We firmly believe that will be well over a million within 5 years. Probably more like 1.3, 1.4. And by 2027, which is a government projection, actually, they think 50% of all new car sales will be electric. So in 2027, they believe that about 1.3 million new cars will be sold, will be plug-in vehicles. And that number obviously increasing towards 2040 and the government ban, that's not a ban, on petrol and diesel cars. So obviously our message is that we're ready as a company. So this is our currently relatively modest production facility in Luton. It's about 8,000 square foot today. We will be increasing the size of our production facility to 20,000 square feet, and that will be happening within the next about 15 months. Our charging infrastructure itself, this is all of the stuff that you'd see in the sort of public realm and workplace realm. So we have wall-mounted solutions on the left there, a standard fast charging solution that's a sort of floor-mounted post, and then our rapid charger on the right there that looks not hugely different from something like a petrol pump. Now, one thing about our business is that we were started 10 years ago as an EV charging business. EV charging is all we do. We don't have any sidelines in weird marine equipment or anything like that. We just do electric vehicle charging. A lot of the other players in the market are spinning out from industrials. So they're a company that's very well versed in electrical industrials, but they don't really design their equipment to be perhaps in the public realm. So I'd argue that our equipment is all purely designed to be in the public realm. These are our designs, it's our equipment. And some of the equipment that you're seeing come out of industrials, it's frankly not very attractive. I don't think we should be necessarily putting it in the public realm. I think it's not been necessarily designed with public realm in mind. So our rapid charger there, it looks quite big, but actually if I leant on it, it would be about here. It's 1.6 meters high, and it's below the planning permission height for most places as well. So I'm just going to whiz through a bit of a history lesson, because I think this is important, again, to look at the market and where we're coming from with private sector-led investment as well. So 5 years ago to the month, the first British-built Nissan Leaf rolled off the production line up in Sunderland. And at that point, there are about 4,000 electric vehicles on UK roads. Today, that number is close to, as I say, 150,000. That was the beginning of this month, so that's probably tipped over 150,000 now. And the full range of vehicles there, we had an event last May to mark the 100,000th that was last May. So between last May and now, we've basically increased the market by 50%. The percent numbers about 1% of the market, 2% of the market are helpful, but they seem very low. I think these are more real figures that can help us all relate to the market more. So 5 years ago, one in nearly 900 new cars sold were electric. We all probably know in this room, we may have LinkedIn connections that go up to 900 people, but day to day, we probably don't mingle with 900 people. So the chances of you bumping into someone that was thinking about a new EV were quite low. Today, it's one in 51. So that's, easily in this room. One in 51 people are buying a new car are getting a plug-in vehicle. So it's very real. Word of mouth is helping marketing spread as well. Again, 5 years ago, fewer than 10 vehicles on the market, some of them pretty unappealing, to be blunt. The one that I've not included there is a G-Wiz, because I like to include as few pictures as possible of that vehicle. Today, there's over 50 models on the market. Now, that is projected to rise through announced models. This is not sort of our thumbsuck guess. This is announced by OEMs to at least 150 different variants within the next 3 years, and within the next 5 years, probably over 200 variants of car. So you'll probably have a plug-in variant of every type of vehicle on the market. Again, 5 years ago, this is the only picture of the G-Wiz. 5 years ago, there were about 3,000 charging points, most of them local authority funded, on-street infrastructure such as that, serving vehicles like the G-Wiz in London. So basically, a glorified three-pin plug on the side of the road hidden in a post. Whereas today, we've got over 16,000. This is in Milton Keynes, our experience centre there, where you have ubiquitous charging. So if you bump into an EV owner in Milton Keynes, the chances are they'll tell you they bought an EV because they saw other people driving one and they thought it was probably time to get one. So in terms of charging infrastructure and therefore what we're doing as a company in terms of investing in it, there's different needs for different drivers. And this comes back to the point that it's fundamentally different to driving a petrol or diesel car. And I think that's a good thing. So that's the circle of all EV drivers and their charging needs. Within that, there is a circle of people who need public charging. You'll notice, obviously, there are people outside of that who don't need public charging, such as a well-known BBC weather presenter, who I won't name, who we actually offered the chance to try our network, and she said, to be honest, I don't really need it. So she doesn't need public charging because she does all her driving at home throughout her home charger. So the circle of people needing public charging is smaller than all drivers, which isn't true for petrol and diesel. We all have to go to a petrol station to fill up with petrol or diesel. Within that, you've got, a much smaller circle of people who need rapid charging, and we're going to talk about that in a second, which is basically the kind of charging where you'll have heard you can fill up in about sort of 20, 30 minutes to 80%. And then within that, there's drivers who will need forthcoming, not existing yet, super rapid charging. So this is the five-minute top-up. This is the petrol station model. So in the fuel world, we all fit in the big circle of we all have to go to the petrol station, we all have a five-minute fill-up. In the new EV world, that small circle is the number of people, the proportion of people, roughly, that will need that super rapid charging. So again, there's confusion around, there's loads of different standards, there's loads of different types, how do we know? It's very confusing. Actually, there's broadly only two questions you ask when you drive an EV. One is, can your EV rapid charge? The increasing answer to that question is yes, because all pure electric cars can rapid charge. It's only plug-in hybrids, which are effectively a vehicle with two drivetrains, that can't rapid charge for the most part. And those vehicles are becoming increasingly less important in our view. So they are a nice bridge for now, because it gets people used to, say, driving 20 miles in a car with a petrol engine for backup. And those people will invariably switch, in our view, to a pure electric car after that model. So plug-in hybrids won't be around forever. They are in our view, sort of 5 to 10 year bridge. Of those 200 new models in 5 years, about 10 of them are plug-in hybrids. The vast majority announced by OEMs are going to be pure electric, because they're going to find it much cheaper to build these cars because they're only putting in one drivetrain. So charging infrastructure types, again, it's a different mindset to petrol and diesel. So about 60% of charging happens at home. John mentioned about 84%, according to Bloomberg, have off-street parking or access to off-street parking. We think that number is probably a bit high. Someone else will say it's about 60% have off-street parking. The number's probably in the middle of those two. So it is the majority of drivers that can charge at home quite adequately. And the ones that can't, there'll be public solutions and workplace solutions for them. So again, workplace is a huge area where demand is taking off. Again, I have charging at home, I have it at work, and quite often I won't plug in at home for weeks because I'll just charge at home and drive to and from and won't bother plugging in. So a lot of people will be able to simply do all their charging wherever their car is parked that's not their house. And then in public realm, you've really got two types that we define as destination, which is the kind of top-up model of plugging in opportunistically. Maybe you're there for an hour or so. And then rapid charging, which is really for longer range driving, extending a range and longer journey, or for those people in perhaps an urban sort of location who don't have off-street parking, who will effectively treat it as a petrol station type model. So in terms of the funding, in terms of the investment, today, and I guess this is historic as well, with home charging, you've got a grant of up to £500 from government, and that was previously 1,000, so it's already been halved over the last few years. For workplace, there's a grant of up to £300 per charging socket, so that's typically £600 per unit, but it's not getting high take-up, frankly, because it's not a very big amount of money compared to the units, and most businesses, rather than going through the bureaucratic faff of applying for that, are actually just paying, to be honest. Destination charging and rapid charging, public realm. Again, most of this was previously government funded, so there was a program called the Plugged in Places Scheme in the UK, where local authorities actually had capital funding to buy infrastructure. The big problem with that, of course, is that they bought the infrastructure, they had a tiny bit of OPEX to run it, and then the OPEX ran out and they went, oh, What do we do if we need to maintain it, service it, et cetera? So those are increasingly being taken over by network operators like us. So our strong view is that while it was a good thing initially in the early days of EVs, the government should not be involved in funding the actual hardware of public charging. It's not a good area for government investment to be going into. Over time, we see that government grant for home charging reducing and being removed. We don't want it to be reduced too quickly because it's a very good way to get people driving an EV and charging properly. It's very good value for money for the government, costing about 10 million quid a year. So for 10 million pounds a year, they're basically funding 80% probably of all EV charging at the moment. It's huge value for money. Again, workplaces, we think companies are already willing to fund that infrastructure, and we don't see a huge need for, if you like, external investment in that sector other than through the companies themselves. In terms of public, we're currently the only provider doing free of charge public charging points for destinations. So our model is about putting in a free of charge charging point for the destination. We get the benefit because it's on our network. It expands the coverage of our network, much like a mobile operator. And they get the benefit of footfall from those 40,000 users of our network coming into their retail premises, hotel, etc. And in rapid charging, it's the same. We were the first supplier. There are other suppliers who have copied us since doing public rapid charges at no cost. And again, the benefit to us is expansion of our network and providing a service to our network of drivers. So our network is called Polar. I didn't come up with that name. I'm not sure where it came from, but it's called Polar. I don't think it had anything to do with polar bears. I think it was more about the polarity of batteries and stuff. But it's the largest public network in the UK. So to give you a sense of scale, if you look at all the kind of significant UK-wide network points, we operate about 45% of those. The next largest operator operates about 9% of those. So there's a big gap between us and our biggest rival in the public network. Over 6,500 charging points. We're adding 2,000 this year. So we're expanding the network by about 30% this year. In 2 years, it will have doubled. So that number will be about 13,000 within 2 years. We've already got the biggest network of rapid charging, allowing people to drive further. And as the point earlier about renewable energy, we completely agree. If you're going to go down the route of EVs, there's no point in talking about EVs unless you're also talking about renewable electricity. So all the electricity on our network is certified through REGOs by OVO Energy, our energy partner. So that's all renewably certified. And again, they've got a tariff in partnership with us for domestic charging on a renewable tariff as well. So quick sort of summary slide, or near summary slide, which I think is quite a nice visual. So if you sort of look back 5 years and fast forward 5 years, you sort of leap from 4,000 to a million EVs, 1 in 900 new cars to 1 in 10, from 9 models on sale to over 200, and from 3,000 public charging points to over 100,000 public charging points, of which we'll operate about 50% of those. So trends, as many charging points as EVs, and I think this is an important point when you hear media reports about, well, there's only 15,000 charging points and there's 150,000 EVs. What everyone forgets in that number is that there's already 90,000 home chargers. So there are already as many dedicated charging points as there are EVs, and lest we forget that you can, we don't advise this, plug it into one of those sockets down there to charge as well. So there's billions of those in the UK. Home charging will be the vast majority forever. So it's maybe 70-80% of charging now. It'll probably settle down to about 60% of charging in the future. Home charging points, the number that are in the ground now, on houses now, is about 100,000. We think that will expand to 600,000-700,000 by 2022. Destination charging will probably dominate. So this idea that you plug in at destinations, you know, my car's plugged in the London Wall car park around the corner, happily charging while I'm here. I'm not waiting for the charge. This is another misperception that charging is slow because you stand there and you wait hours for the car to charge. You leave it while you're doing other stuff. Rapid charging, about 20% of the network. And again, workplaces we think will be huge over the next few years, where employers suddenly realize this is a great service to provide their employees. They can clean up the air around their offices and locations. They can clean up their fleets very quickly. And there's just some of our numbers. So a couple I'll pull out I haven't already mentioned. In terms of data, we've got a huge amount of charging data. So we've probably got data from over 12 million charging events. So in terms of informing policy, we're engaged with OLEV and other government departments to actually inform policy around charging because we've got more data than anyone else. We've got a field-based team of electricians, so we are a vertically integrated business. We design our own units, we make our own units, we install our own units, we service our own units, we operate our own units. Other people in the UK market only fulfill one of those layers, so they just operate someone else's units. So they lose money because they pay more for the unit, and they lose money because they pay to get subcontracted maintenance, which usually isn't particularly good. So we're vertically integrated because we think that provides the best service to our domestic and commercial customers. And as a business, our sales have more than doubled this past financial year. And we are a profitable business as well, unlike most of our rivals. So thank you very much.
How about wireless charging going forward?
So we are a licensee of a wireless charging technology from Qualcomm. Obviously, you're probably aware of Qualcomm as a business, huge chip maker. They have a technology called Qualcomm Halo. We're the UK licensee for that technology. We've got a demonstration unit in our head office in Luton. They've got a couple in the UK. We also support the Formula E racing series with that technology. I think static wireless charging will definitely increase in prevalence in our view. So we will quite probably see it in things like car park locations. I think the idea of wireless charging roads could be a step into the future, further than we're currently prepared to look. The real issue with wireless charging isn't the companies like Qualcomm that are doing great work on the tech to actually enable it. It's actually at the OEM level. It all comes back to, it's the Better Place problem we heard about earlier. You know, Better Place burnt through £1 billion of VC money for battery swapping and then sold their assets for 460 grand. So that's why battery swapping doesn't work, by the way. But it's the same problem that if the OEMs don't collaborate and have the same sort of wireless charging standards, then people supplying the tech can't really integrate, basically.
Just on smart charging, that issue of moving the peak, does your app have an override in it? And if so, are you seeing any behavioral resistance?
So we don't currently have an app for our home chargers. So they are effectively, they communicate with the back end to tell the user how much has been charged that day. We are bringing out a smart home charger, which will either be out the end of this year or beginning of next year. It's largely dependent on government regulation because the government said, we want smart charging and we're going to mandate it. And we said, okay, what are the regulations going to be? We're working on it. When will the regulations be published? We're working on it. Okay. So once they publish those, we'll obviously then go away and develop the solution properly, but it's in development already. But it will have an override function, of course, to the ultimate view of smart charging, which we fed back through government consultations, through the outstanding consultations that have been done by Energy UK and SSE, are that the consumer must retain control. The DNOs cannot interrupt the charge. DNOs want to be able to come into your home and fiddle with things. But our very strong view is that the DNA shouldn't be allowed to do that by default. Again, the DNOs are the ones saying we're going to have real trouble investing in all this substation upgrades. Well, they're also the most profitable players in the energy sector. So if they're making £1 billion of profit, they've probably got some money going around for investment. So I think the smart charging thing will definitely happen, but it will probably be, I think, 12 months before you start to see it come to market.
And anecdotally, what do you think the charging behaviour is likely to be? Will most people happily fall in line? Most consumers happily fall in line?
I think, yeah. I mean, our view is the majority of people would just, if they're incentivised to do so. And again, we need the energy companies. I mean, OVO has an overnight tariff, for example, a cheaper overnight tariff. Is if you're incentivised to charge overnight, why would you not? If it's going to be half the price, you'd of course do it. And if it came up automatically and said, would you like to save 50% by simply pressing this button to charge your car overnight? And it doesn't affect you at all, of course you're going to press the button. I mean, unless you're a bit weird, but you're definitely going to do it. So I think incentivized charging is definitely the way forward. There's already natural diversity. You know, I think the whole I've got a Scottish aunt that I visit three times a year thing about driving an EV is kind of a bit of a red herring. You know, we know the average mileage in the UK. We know it's 8,000 miles a year. We know that would probably, even with the current EVs with relatively small battery sizes, that would currently be about plugging in every 5 days for a full charge. So we know that the charging at the moment isn't sort of everyday everyone. It's actually there's already a level of diversity in the system already.
Just quickly, assuming the business model is build, own, operate, could you walk us through the economics of a station in terms of upfront cost, number of charges a day, revenues, costs, time to pay back the capital?
That'd be interesting. I think what I'll say about that, if I may, is basically there's two. So on the hardware side, that's very simple in that it's better for us to make our own stuff because we're not losing margin on paying someone else. So I think there'll be, obviously the barriers to entry in hardware are lower. So if I just talk about the network and operation of the public charging points, we have a very different model from most other operators. So our core proposition is a subscription model, where that subscription model unlocks lower price charging. So we negotiate, because we've got a huge user base, we negotiate with hosts to not charge electricity. So a lot of our site hosts, over 70% of those 6,500 charging points currently would not charge you the electricity you're using to charge on their points if you're a member of our network. So if you pay our subscription, which is only £7.85 per month, you then unlock that level of access. So you pay that, and then you get 70% of those charge points for free. The ones that aren't, our view is to price it at or below, actually, home charging rates and achieve economies of scale through that. So our strong view is that public charging shouldn't be materially more expensive than home charging. So our business model is a Netflix-style model of get a subscription, provide free content, if you like, some free content, which is free charging, and then the rest is reasonably priced. Every other operator I know of is effectively adopting a pure pay-as-you-go model. So they are investing in a piece of kit. They are then saying, well, what are we selling? Well, we're selling electricity, so let's commoditize the electricity. Let's just charge 40p per kilowatt hour for the electricity and expect consumers to pay that. And they simply won't. No one's going to pay 40p per kilowatt hour for something they get. I know there's the coffee example, which everyone's going to raise, but bluntly, people are not going to pay 36, 40p per kilowatt hour to charge. It's going to be an emergency charge point because we'll be there a street down the road offering a third of the price. So why would you go to the more expensive one unless ours was busy or, as like I say, it was last minute? So we don't think that model will work in terms of just commoditizing electricity and charging loads more for the unit of electricity. So that's why our network model is about, you know, the subscribers that we have at the moment, you know, doubling probably within the next 2 years and then growing even more in line with the market. So
how many subscribers do you need to get to that break-even point? And as the network matures, what kind of returns do you expect to make?
It doesn't really work on, at the moment, effectively, we have we are basically profitable on the base of the network. So if we didn't make stuff as well, effectively, we believe we'd be profitable on the base of the network because we're getting a return on the users. It's like a mobile phone contract. I pay for 30 gigabytes per month. I never use 30 gigabytes, but I like to pay for it anyway. So you pay for that, and then basically you'll have users that are high users, low users, but it will even out. So it's impossible for us to just say that charge point is profitable and that one's not, because it doesn't work that way. It's like Netflix. It's not like them saying our free show is profitable and our non-free show is not profitable. So building the network means that it's a completely beneficial cycle, because the more money we get through the revenues from the network, we can invest that in the network, grow the network, and if we grow the network, it's more likely more people will subscribe, and thus the circle goes on and on. So at the moment, we are profitable, and we assume that we will remain so as that grows. But as I say, that of that 42,000, well over 50% of those are pure subscribers, and we've got pay-as-you-go users as well. And we have to, from a legal point of view, the government has mandated ad hoc access. So as of November last year, all new public charging points have to be available at the point of use. So you have to be able to turn up and use it. Now, that might be you have to download an app first, like parking, but you have to be able to use it. We know that the biggest operator in London currently is not complying with that, but that'll be interesting to see if OLED do anything about that.
Again, just final thing is barriers to entry.
Sorry?
I mean, barriers to entry. I mean, I don't know how much capital it's cost to establish the network, but the oil companies, there's lots of people interested, no doubt, in this as an opportunity. So what's to stop? What's your long-term competitive?
The barriers to entry for public charging is sites. So there's been an announcement recently about a UK firm saying they've got enough money for 1,500 rapid chargers. Well, that's great, but they've currently got about 5. So you can't get 6,500 charging points overnight. It takes you time to negotiate with those sites to get electrical connections to install and then service and maintain that network. So, probably speaking out of turn, but you know, we're a dedicated business. It's all we do. So we have those engineers in the field to go and maintain and service our network. Our uptime is 98% plus on our network. You can't say the same for other networks that are out there, particularly historical ones, particularly motorway services, who we are currently contractually not allowed to go and install that. And the analysis I've done says that only about 40% of charges at motorway services are currently fully operational. So if we did that, we'd change that overnight. But
I'm interested to know how you plan where you're going to expand the network. I noticed you haven't got very many chargers according to that map in the southwest. And yet the other side to the question about the grid is that there are areas now where there's far too much power and grid would really like more users. And the southwest is a really good example. In Milton Keynes, it seemed as though if you build the charging infrastructure, the cars will come. So are you driven by those kind of questions where there's power?
We're driven largely by where there's demand from a user base. So, I mean, Wales, for example, has about 2,600 EV drivers at the moment, or EV licensed owners out of 150,000. So it's a relatively small market. We have installed 4 rapid chargers in Wales in the last sort of 6 months. And we've got one in Mid Wales going in. I think it'll be the first rapid charger in Mid Wales. But I mean, power, the difference is peak power and power, if that makes sense. So it might be that there is some surplus there in terms of overall power demand, but actually in terms of peaks, there aren't many sites in Wales necessarily that you can go and put a rapid charger in tomorrow, because actually you're drawing so much power.
I was thinking about the southwest in the sense of Cornwall and Devon.
Yeah, so absolutely. Basically, we'll go where the demand is. And you know, the other piece of the story is obviously energy storage, where there are actually struggles with demand, working with potentially the energy storage sector to actually back up our chargers. But we wouldn't necessarily go and install a charger just because there's excess demand out, just excess energy supply down there. We'd go if there are a substantial number of EV drivers.
Yes, I'm interested to know how much of your business to date has been driven or supported by funds, government funds, grants and the like. And more interested in the future model and whether you see that changing or whether it's a risk.
So workplace, really, as I said, the take-up for work, I'll just address the three core markets. Workplace, there's very little take-up of that grant because it's not really significant enough for a lot of workplaces to bother going through the bureaucracy of applying for this voucher and then redeeming it. So a lot of workplaces are saying, just do it, install it, it's fine. It's going to save us so much money and fuel that we don't care. So for home and work, for home and public then. For home, obviously, there are some charging points that have been installed without the government grant. Not many, but there are some. The vast majority have been. So in that sense, our home charge business, as I say, and it's the most significant part of our business in terms of hardware, has been driven by government support, obviously, for that. We are very keen that that isn't removed quickly because there isn't someone waiting to take it, but we are seeing those models emerge. So on the home charging, the future is very much about, you know, we heard earlier, 90%+ of new cars are financed. So that means actually the sticker price is largely irrelevant as long as the monthly cost works out. So we are seeing an increasing number of companies coming forward and wanting to potentially fund that. So if there isn't a government grant for the home charger, how they bundle that into, say, a PCP for a car, a vehicle finance agreement, so they can actually bundle the cost in so the consumer doesn't get hit with the hundreds of pounds cost up front that's bundled. We're seeing employers fund it because they're actually saying, well, if it's a company car, you're going to save that in a month in diesel, so I'll just pay for it. Why not? So there are plenty of people coming forward to replace that model, but it needs to be done gently over time. So I think home charging won't be an issue. And in public charging, there's no direct government grants for public charging now. So there was historically these plugged in places schemes, which we were effectively a hardware supplier to the local authority buying kit from us, capital cost. But increasingly, all of our new network going in is completely privately funded. So there's no government funding behind any of the new installations, public installations that we're doing at the moment on the UK scale. There's individual pockets in towns that have got special grants, but the UK-wide network, we're just seeing huge private investment demand to support us doing that.
What is the average cost of installing a home charge unit, although you get £500 back? And secondly, what would be the cost of driving, say, a 2-litre car at 70 miles an hour down a motorway for 100 miles?
Okay, so first question, the average cost is about anywhere between £200 and £400, depending on whose unit you buy after the grant for a home charger. And again, you know, most people, if they're driving a significant amount of miles, would see that payback within 6 months, probably of fuel use. Obviously, those costs will come down over time as economies grow, so the charges will get cheaper. It depends on regulation. If the government starts making the charges more expensive with mandated smart charging, they might not come down. But the costs are hundreds of pounds, basically, in the low hundreds after the grant. Cost of 70 miles an hour for 100 miles? So if you let's assume you do a gallon of fuel is about £6. So if you have a very efficient diesel and do 50 miles per gallon on a motorway speed, so you're going to use £12 of fuel to do 100 miles. So you'd use £12 of fuel to do 100 miles, whereas our rapid charge, if you're a member of our scheme, would cost you about £2.50 to charge for 100 miles of range. So it depends on which, you know, fueling method you use, home, public, etc. But generally speaking, it's very hard to make an EV more expensive per mile than petrol or diesel, even an efficient one.
If you were home charging only, it'd be a quarter of the cost.
Yeah, if you were home charging, it'd be about £2 on a very cheap tariff. And if you're about 15p per kilowatt hour, you'd need about 30 kilowatt hours for that. So effectively, it's about £4.50. So it's still a third of the cost at home, even on a daytime tariff.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.